Hello, knowledge seekers. In this episode of 20 Minute Books, we dive into The Future is History by Marcia Gessen, a penetrating exploration into Russia's tumultuous relationship with democracy through the lens of its people. This distinguished book embarks on a journey from the fall of the Communist Party to the depths of activism in the Putin era, offering a vivid narrative that explains the emergence of Russia's contemporary brand of totalitarianism. At the heart of this exploration are the personal stories of individuals navigating the complex landscape of post-Soviet Russia, making it not only a historical account, but a deeply human one as well. Marcia Gessen, an acclaimed journalist based in New York City, brings an unrivaled depth of knowledge and insight to this subject. With their work featured extensively in the New York Review of Books and The New Yorker, Gessen's authoritative voice has also given us The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin, amongst other significant works. Their first-hand experience and analytical skills make The Future is History a compelling read for anyone looking to understand the intricacies of Russian politics and society. This book is especially relevant for readers who are curious about the inner workings of Russian politics, students delving into sociology and world politics, and history enthusiasts eager to understand the contemporary challenges faced by post-Soviet states. Join us as we unfold the layers of Marcia Gessen's rich narrative, offering a glimpse into the forces that have shaped Russia's path toward its current state of governance. The Future is History: How Totalitarianism Reclaimed Russia. Introduction. Understanding Russia's complex path from past to present. Is history merely a cycle, forever spinning us into familiar patterns of triumph and failure? Such questions loom large when we cast our gaze toward Russia, a nation whose journey from the strictures of authoritarian rule through to the dissolution of the Soviet Union, only to arrive at the doorstep of Vladimir Putin's leadership, sketches a zigzagging line through the annals of modern history. The story of Russia's current state is not just a tale of political shifts, it's a story deeply entwined with the collective consciousness of its people and their grasp, or lack thereof, on their nation's own past. For those peering into the intricacies of Russian society, the emergence of Putin's regime after such a significant ideological overthrow might seem perplexing. Yet, a closer inspection reveals a crucial clue: the absence of a widespread, in-depth understanding of Russia's historical and sociological landscape. This gap in knowledge, seemingly inconsequential at first, has paved the way for the re-emergence of totalitarian leadership. In this exploration, we'll uncover some startling realities that marked Russia's transition during the 1990s, see how popular culture reflects deeper societal currents, and delve into the bizarre ways in which ordinary objects can become ensnared in political symbolism. We'll recount tales of desperate measures taken by some Russians to secure money and food in the grim vista of the 1990s. A time when economic hardship and social turbulence turned daily survival into a fierce battle. This period, ripe with stories of struggle and compromise, serves as a stark reminder of the human cost of rapid political and economic transitions. Additionally, we'll discover the reasons behind the success of Old Songs About the Most Important Things, a film whose resonance with the Russian public hints at a collective nostalgia for simpler, perhaps more certain times. This cinematic success story is more than just entertainment. It is a window into the soul of a nation grappling with its identity amidst sweeping change. Lastly, we'll explore an intriguing episode where a brand of cheese became embroiled in allegations of promoting homosexual propaganda, showcasing the surreal lengths to which societal debates and fears can manifest, implicating even the most benign products and symbols in the wider battlegrounds of cultural and political discourse. Through these vignettes, we gain insights not only into the events that shape Russia's present and future, but also into the complex tapestry of human behavior belief systems, and the relentless quest for identity and control in a rapidly changing world. Part 1: The Silent Shadows of the Soviet Era. Understanding Russia's Psychological Crossroads. In the heart of the Soviet Union, during a time when the Iron Curtain was more than just a metaphor, there emerged a figure both pioneering and paradoxical: Marina Arutyunyan. In the 1970s, she carved out a space for herself as one of Russia's very few female psychoanalysts navigating the treacherous waters of a discipline that was all but forbidden. The scarcity of professionals like Arutyunyan speaks to a broader narrative, one where the fields of psychology, sociology, and indeed any discipline encouraging introspection were not just neglected but actively suppressed. Rewinding to the aftermath of the 1920s, Bolshevik Revolution provides some context. The revolution was steeped in Marxist ideals that envisioned a new archetype of humanity, one devoid of the individualism at psychology's core. This ideology saw no value in personal reflection or the nuanced understanding of human emotion and thought. Instead, the ideal Soviet citizen was simply another component of the larger state machinery, devoid of personal identity and ambition beyond their role in advancing the collective cause. It was in this environment that, in 1925, Moscow University's Psychological Society was disbanded, and the insights of thinkers like Sigmund Freud were relegated to restricted sections of libraries. By 1931, a comprehensive ban was in place, erasing the social sciences and humanities from academic inquiry within Russia. The pendulum of ideological openness began to sway back in the 1960s, inching further with each decade until, by 1968, psychology and humanities resurfaced in the academic curriculum of Moscow University. Yet, this revival stumbled on the legacy of stalled intellectual progress. With academic materials scarce due to decades of censorship, Russian scholars found themselves decades behind their international counterparts, trying to bridge a chasm that had widened in the interim. This intellectual vacuum would have profound implications as Russia confronted massive societal shifts in the late 1980s and 1990s. Historically, governments have leaned on sociology and related fields, such as polling, to gauge public sentiment and inform policy decisions. However, until 1987, Soviet Russia remained an anomaly, having conducted no such research. Even the initial forays into polling were hampered by a lack of baseline data and an understanding of how to craft meaningful questions. This dearth of socio-political insight was particularly glaring as Mikhail Gorbachev initiated his policy of glasnost and perestroika in the mid-1980s, aiming to liberalize the Soviet Union and distance it from the repressive legacies of its past. The reforms unleashed a torrent of change, carrying with them psychological and political ripples that would shape the nation for decades to come. At a moment when understanding the psyche and sentiments of the Soviet citizenry was crucial, leaders found themselves navigating in the dark, guided by little more than intuition and ideology. Marina Arutyunyan's pioneering work was a beacon in these murky waters, hinting at the depths of introspection and understanding that lay unexplored beneath the surface of Soviet society. Yet, as Russia stood on the precipice of radical transformation, the absence of a well-developed discourse on individual and collective psychology marked a critical weakness, rendering the nation ill-prepared for the uncharted territories of psychological and societal change it was about to encounter. Part 2: Navigating the New Russian Identity Amidst Political Upheaval. As the winds of change, the perestroika, began to sweep across the Soviet Union in the late 1980s under Mikhail Gorbachev's leadership, an immense task lay ahead: understanding and remolding the Soviet psyche for a new era. Alexander Nikolaevich Yakovlev, dubbed Gorbachev's chief ideologue, found himself at the heart of this monumental challenge. Tasked with fine-tuning the details of perestroika and rallying the Soviet population around these reforms, Yakovlev faced an uphill battle amidst a government riddled with opposition and self-interest. With a history of political exile for criticizing Soviet leadership and harboring views aligning with Gorbachev's reforms, Yakovlev's return to the fray represented a bold statement of ideological commitment. Yet, despite this shared vision, the path to remaking the Soviet Union was littered with obstacles. Government officials, many of whom had climbed the political ladder over decades, viewed perestroika with skepticism, if not outright hostility, fearing the loss of power and influence. Others, like Boris Yeltsin, saw in the reforms an opportunity to further their ambitions, leveraging support for perestroika for personal gain rather than genuine ideological alignment. Amidst this tumultuous landscape, the newly established Center for Sociology began its quest to understand and forge the new man for a post-perestroika Russia. The pivotal question at the center of their efforts was, who is today's Homo Sovieticus? This inquiry aimed to gauge whether the Soviet citizen, much like the state itself, had evolved in recent years. In 1969, Russian journalist Andrei Amalrik had provocatively questioned whether the Soviet Union would survive until 1984, suggesting its downfall due to a lack of a unified, compelling belief system to replace Marxism or the Russian Orthodox Church. This sentiment echoed through the halls of the Center for Sociology as it embarked on one of its first public polls in 1988. The findings were startling. A mere 5.6% of the population continued to see Marxism or Leninism as the arbiter of truth, with the younger generations showing a pronounced shift towards individualistic values over communal communist ideals. These early signals seemed to herald the demise of Homo Sovieticus, marking a significant departure from the identity forged under the Soviet regime. Yet, as the Soviet Union teetered on the brink of dissolution, the reality of this transformation proved far more complex than initial polling suggested. The journey to redefine the Russian identity was only beginning, unfolding against the backdrop of a crumbling Communist Party and a nation in search of its place in a rapidly changing world. This period of profound uncertainty and reinvention set the stage for a struggle to reconcile past legacies with the aspirations and realities of a new Russian era. Part 3: The Precipice of Change, Russia's Descent into the Hands of Authority. On a fateful day, the 19th of August 1991, the Soviet Union found itself on the brink of irrevocable change. A tense standoff unfolded between Boris Yeltsin and a group led by Gorbachev's vice president, Gennady Yanayev. Over 3 days of crisis, Gorbachev was effectively held hostage in Crimea, marking a turning point that would lead to the dissolution of a superpower and a seismic shift in global politics. In an unforeseen twist, upon his return, Gorbachev made a stunning move. He disbanded the Communist Party, an institution that had been the bedrock of Soviet power for decades. This act heralded the end of an era and paved the way for Boris Yeltsin's ascendancy to power, leaving the nation reeling in a torrent of uncertainty and turmoil. In the wake of this political upheaval, the territorial integrity of the former Soviet Empire came under intense debate. Nations around the Baltic Sea, like Lithuania, were caught in a struggle for independence, while regions such as Kaliningrad wished to align with the emerging Russian Federation. Amidst this identity crisis, the remnants of the Soviet infrastructure, from the use of rubles to Soviet passports, contributed to a deepening sense of confusion about the future of Russia and its erstwhile territories. This period of rapid transition also witnessed the legalizing of private commerce and a frenzy of privatization, thrusting the economy into a state of flux. The Russian populace found themselves navigating a landscape where the past was irretrievably gone, yet the future was shadowed in uncertainty. The psychological and emotional strain of this transition was immense, laying fertile ground for the rise of an authoritarian figure. Erich Fromm, a renowned psychologist, outlines a scenario wherein sudden exposure to uncertainty can push citizens toward authoritarianism, This longing for a figure of authority derives from a desperate need to regain a semblance of stability and direction, a desire for someone to make decisions in a world that has become dizzyingly incomprehensible. This dynamic, observed in the aftermath of World War I in Germany, bore striking similarities to the situation unfolding in 1990s Russia. As societal structures disintegrated and the old certainties vanished, the Russian people stood at a crossroads, facing the vast unknown. While some saw in this moment unbounded possibilities, others grieved the loss of a predictable future. In this climate of fear, uncertainty, and longing for direction, the stage was set for an authoritarian leader to emerge, someone who could promise the reassurance of order in the chaos, appealing to the deep-seated human instinct for security in the face of overwhelming change. Part 4: Shattered Illusions, the Stark Realities of Post-Soviet Class Divide. The dissolution of the Soviet Union brought about an era of profound transformation within Russia, introducing societal dynamics that were previously alien to its citizens. Among these was the emergence of conspicuous wealth and poverty, crafting a landscape of stark contrasts and catalyzing feelings of inequality and resentment on an unprecedented scale. In the days of the Soviet Union, there existed an implicit pact of mutual pretense. The populace feigned productivity, and the government feigned adequate compensation. This facade of uniformity masked the underlying disparities, allowing for a semblance of equality. However, the advent of private commerce in the early 1990s, accompanied by the legal recognition of private wealth, peeled back the veneer of egalitarianism, exposing the populace to the realities of economic stratification for the first time. The opening of borders under the new regime served as a mirror to the Russian people, reflecting not only their own condition, but also how vastly different their lives were compared to those abroad. Such revelations bred feelings of poverty and deprivation among many, emotions that were unfamiliar in the Soviet era due to the state's control over information and strict norms against displaying wealth. The evisceration of these norms left the population grappling with newfound sentiments of envy and bitterness, as a minority reveled in ostentatious displays of wealth, driving expensive cars and adopting lavish lifestyles. This flaunting of prosperity was not just a departure from the past, it was a direct affront to the collective ethos of Soviet society, creating visible rifts that went beyond mere economics, embedding class distinctions deeply within the fabric of Russian society. In this new Russia, governance itself became a vehicle for inequality. The decentralization that marked Boris Yeltsin's presidency included the appointment of regional leaders, like mayors, based not on merit but on recommendations from Yeltsin's staff. This haphazard allocation of leadership roles furthered the chasm between the affluent and the impoverished, as some regions saw their fortunes skyrocket while others plummeted into despair. Boris Nemtsov's mayoral appointment to Nizhny Novgorod, Russia's third largest city, epitomizes this disparity. Nemtsov and his family enjoyed the privileges of their status, moving to an exclusive suburb and living a life of relative opulence, a stark contrast to the strife and scarcity faced by many Russians during this tumultuous period. A poignant illustration of this divide comes from Solikamsk, where Lyosha, born just a year after Zhanna Nemtsov, narrated a harrowing account of destitution so severe that children resorted to degrading acts for meager sums of money, and hunting stray dogs became a means of survival. These harrowing disparities underscore the profound social and economic shifts that characterized post-Soviet Russia, highlighting the tumultuous journey from a veneer of uniformity to the harsh realities of inequality, marking a nation in search of its identity amidst the relics of its past and the uncertainties of its future. Part 5: When the Past Beckons, the Rising Tide of Soviet Nostalgia. During Yeltsin's turbulent reign, Boris Yeltsin's presidency, marked by a fervent push towards transparency and accountability, sought to unveil the hidden atrocities of the Soviet era, a mission fraught with complexities and unanticipated consequences. Tasked with this delicate endeavor was Alexander Nikolaevich Yakovlev, a former colleague of Gorbachev, who soon found himself wading through a quagmire of historical horrors that seemed almost too surreal to share with the public. The revelations, including bizarre episodes like Stalin's AIDS, turning the grim task of processing execution documents into a macabre race, painted a picture of a time riddled with inexplicable cruelties. However, many of these shocking disclosures remained largely under wraps, leaving the vast majority of Russians in the dark about the full extent of their nation's troubled past. As Yeltsin grappled with the ghosts of Soviet history, another shadow loomed large over his administration: the war in Chechnya. The conflict, which began as a separatist uprising in 1994, quickly metastasized into a quagmire that tarnished Yeltsin's leadership. With casualty figures rising and no clear end in sight, the Chechen war eroded the public's faith in Yeltsin, fueling disillusionment and a longing for days gone by. It was against this backdrop of political strife and societal unrest that a poignant wave of nostalgia for the Soviet era began to swell. The New Year's Eve of 1995 marked a turning point in this collective yearning for the past, as Russia's main public television station broadcast old songs about the most important things. This film, an unabashed tribute to the propaganda musicals of the Soviet golden ages of the 1930s and 1950s, struck a chord with the Russian populace. Through its portrayal of characters immersed in the simplicity and joy of Soviet life, serenading each other with traditional songs and reveling in the glory of bygone days, the film offered an escape from the grim realities of contemporary Russia. Its lack of conflict or worry provided a stark contrast to the grim narrative unfolding across the nation, resonating deeply with a populace wearied by years of instability and disappointment. The film's success was immediate and overwhelming, with its soundtrack becoming a ubiquitous presence and prompting the production of three sequels. This phenomenon underscored a significant shift in the national consciousness, a retreat into the comfort of nostalgia, where the complexities of present-day Russia could be momentarily forgotten. For many Russians, the hollowed-out allure of a simpler Soviet past, untouched by the realities of repression and atrocity, became a refuge. In the midst of Yeltsin's troubled reign, the promises of progress and transparency were overshadowed by a collective longing to return to a past that seemed, through the lens of nostalgia, predictably tranquil and untroubling, underscored by a troublingly incomplete confrontation with history's darker chapters. Part 6. From the Ashes of Chaos: How Vladimir Putin Ascended to Power. In the waning years of the 1990s, Russia found itself grappling with burgeoning crises that combined to produce a palpable sense of despair among its citizens. The Russian adage, "Budushchego net," there is no future, seemed to encapsulate the national mood as Russians confronted the unsettling expansiveness of their newfound freedoms amid economic and political instability. The late 90s were particularly tumultuous for Russia. The culmination of years of financial missteps forced the nation into a precarious position, culminating in a devastating default on its loans. The economic upheaval was mirrored in the political arena, where Russia's stature on the world stage took a hit following NATO's intervention in the Yugoslavian civil war. The air raids in Serbia, perceived by many as orchestrated by the United States against Russia's orthodox allies, not only deepened the sense of vulnerability among Russians, but also stirred feelings of indignation. A staggering 92% of the population condemned the bombings as illegal, with many expressing heightened fear and anxiety over the international conflict. Amid this backdrop of economic despair and geopolitical tensions, a series of apartment bombings in August and September of 1999, which claimed the lives of 293 Russians, injected a fresh dose of terror into the heart of the nation. As people demanded answers and action, the spotlight turned to a relatively unknown figure in Russian politics, Vladimir Putin. Formerly a lieutenant colonel in the KGB, and recently appointed to oversee the secret police by Boris Yeltsin, Putin presented himself as a figure of unwavering resolve. His response to the apartment bombings was immediate and unequivocal, promising swift and lethal justice for the perpetrators. This display of determination resonated with a populace yearning for leadership, capable of restoring order and stability to their tumultuous world. Putin's steely response contrasted sharply with the perceived inefficacy of Yeltsin's leadership, casting the former intelligence officer in the role of a strongman poised to guide Russia through its period of crisis. His assertiveness in the face of national tragedy and his willingness to take decisive action won him the admiration and support of many Russians, who saw in him the potential for a return to stability. Thus, in August 1999, Putin ascended to the role of Prime Minister, and only a few months thereafter, in a surprising turn of events, Boris Yeltsin handed over the presidency to him. This transition signaled the dawn of a new era in Russian politics, one where Putin's brand of authoritative leadership promised to steer the nation away from the brink of despair, towards a future where order and security might once again prevail. Part 7: The Tightening Grip, Russia's Drift Towards Authoritarianism, Under Putin. Lyosha's journey from the discomfort of his adolescent years to the comparative sanctuary of college life mirrors Russia's own transition into the 21st century, a period of both personal and national redefining. His exposure to broader, more accepting attitudes towards homosexuality in college, juxtaposed against the oppressive environment of his youth, highlights a nation grappling with its identity amidst shifting cultural and political landscapes. However, as Lyosha learned in his political science classes, the country was simultaneously veering towards a more authoritarian regime, an observation that filled him with unease. In the brief span since Boris Yeltsin's departure from the presidency, Vladimir Putin had swiftly moved to consolidate power. His efforts to bring the 89 districts under tighter Kremlin control, notably by ousting local leaders appointed during Yeltsin's term and rolling back several reforms, signaled a deliberate shift towards centralization. Perhaps most symbolically potent of these actions was reclaiming national television for the state, a move that reverberated deeply in Russian society. The Kremlin didn't stop at television. Other media outlets quickly became instruments for promoting state narratives and discrediting opposition. Critics of Putin's regime, including noted figures like political scientist Andreas Umland, found themselves targets of vicious smear campaigns. These tactics were not just confined to the realm of political discourse. The regime skillfully stoked societal fears and prejudices, blurring lines between homosexuality and pedophilia in a calculated bid to rally public sentiment against perceived moral threats. This orchestrated moral panic found advocates among citizens like Anna Levchenko, whose personal blog, Crusades Against Supposed Conspiracies, caught the attention of the Kremlin. Her elevation to the government's investigative committee on pedophilia, advocating for draconian measures like chemical castration, underscored the regime's willingness to exploit societal anxieties for political gain. As Putin systematically dismantled the liberties and reforms that marked the perestroika era, the narrative of stability began to resonate with many Russians, weary from the upheavals of the 1990s. Marin Arutyunyan, a psychoanalyst, observed a notable shift in the mood of her patients. The anxiety and uncertainty that pervaded the previous decade seemed to dissipate, replaced by a sense of relief as Putin's authoritarian measures ostensibly provided a bulwark against the chaos of Russia's recent past. Yet, this newfound stability came at a considerable cost. The gradual erosion of freedoms and the centralization of power under Putin marked a departure from the ideals that had once promised a more open, democratic Russia. As Lyosha and his professors noted, the country found itself in the throes of an authoritarian situation, a stark reminder that the quest for stability can sometimes lead societies to embrace the very forces that threaten their freedom. Part 8: Putin's Power Play, Returning to the Presidency. Amidst rising discontent, in 2008, Vladimir Putin found himself at a pivotal juncture. Having served two consecutive terms as president of Russia, the nation's constitution mandated that he step down. Yet, Putin's political journey was far from over as he transitioned to the role of prime minister, a maneuver that raised eyebrows among critics who saw it as a circumvention of the democratic process, albeit one that did little to tarnish his popularity. In fact, public opinion polls at the time placed him among the greatest Russians of all time, a testament to his enduring influence. However, this reverence for powerful figures wasn't confined to Putin alone. Surprisingly, Joseph Stalin's legacy, once marred by the atrocities of his regime, seemed to undergo a rehabilitation in the eyes of some Russians. From a meager 12% favorability in 1989, Stalin's popularity surged to the point where he was ranked the third greatest Russian in a 2003 poll. This shift alarmed sociologists and reflected a broader cultural trend that conflated greatness with sheer power, a mindset that unsettlingly extended admiration to historically divisive figures such as Napoleon and Hitler. Amid this complex backdrop of nostalgia and power worship, concerns were mounting over Putin's apparent disregard for constitutional safeguards and the gradual erosion of civil liberties. Inspired by the Ukrainian Orange Revolution and the Occupy movement in the United States, a wave of civil activism began to swell across Russia between 2011 and 2013. These activists, driven by a refusal to trade their rights for the semblance of stability under an authoritarian regime, represented a diverse cross-section of the Russian populace. Among them was Masha, who, as a child, had been inculcated into the Little Octobrists, a junior branch of the communist organization in the twilight of the Soviet era. Like many of her fellow protesters, Masha was particularly incensed by the 2011 announcement that Dmitry Medvedev would cede the presidency back to Putin in the 2012 elections, a move interpreted by many as a choreographed power swap that laid bare the machinations of political corruption. For these Russians, Putin's return to the presidency was not just a breach of democratic norms, but a blatant flaunting of political chicanery. As Putin reassumed the presidential mantle and Medvedev retreated into the role of prime minister, the sentiment among the opposition was one of deep disillusionment, encapsulated in the cynical reproach, "Well, they're not even attempting to hide their corruption anymore." This moment marked a significant fracture in Russian politics, where the veneer of democratic procedure was stretched thin, revealing the underlying tensions of a nation grappling with its identity and the limits of its people's tolerance for autocratic rule. Part 9, The Tug of War, Protests, Activism, and the Rise of Anti-LGBTQ Legislation in Putin's Russia. The year 2011 marked a pivotal moment for Russia as anti-corruption demonstrations began to gain momentum. Among the throngs of protesters emerged Masha, whose fervent dedication to the cause swiftly positioned her as a leader among activists. Her commitment extended beyond mere participation. Masha was known for her compassionate efforts, such as providing water and support to fellow activists detained during protests. This spirit of solidarity led her to meet members of the art activist group Pussy Riot, who were arrested following a demonstration just before the presidential election polls opened in March 2012. However, it was the demonstration during Putin's 2012 inauguration that unveiled the escalating scale of the protests and the Kremlin's heavy-handed response. Amid growing unrest, authorities designated Bolotnaya Square as the sanctioned protest site, citing its manageable number of entrances and exits as a measure for public safety. Yet, the planned peaceful protest descended into chaos when counter-demonstrators, reportedly allowed to pass through the checkpoints, detonated a smoke grenade, plunging the square into violent disorder. The ensuing crackdown saw 24 peaceful protesters arrested, while an overwhelming force of 8,000 armed troops quelled the unrest with baton swings, one of which struck Masha, rendering her unconscious. This aggressive response underscored the Kremlin's determination to silence opposition, setting a grim tone for the administration's tolerance of dissent. In the aftermath of the inauguration protests, the Kremlin seemed to be walking a fine line in handling the prosecution of anti-Putin activists, likely aiming to avoid further inciting public outrage. Parallel to these developments, however, was an ominous shift towards conservative social legislation targeting the LGBTQ+ community. By early 2013, new proposals seeking to criminalize homosexual propaganda were thrust into the legislative spotlight, putting the LGBTQ+ community on high alert. Lyosha, now a political science teacher deeply invested in the rights and protections of sexual minorities, watched in dismay as the debate over the anti-LGBTQ+ legislation gained traction. Notably, popular television personalities, including Dmitry Kiselev, vocalized support for the ban during a widely viewed talk show, signaling a troubling consensus among influential figures in Russian media. This moment represented a chilling convergence of political and social conservatism, as the Kremlin not only clamped down on political dissent but also sought to legislate identity and expression. The proposed ban on homosexual propaganda emerged as a stark symbol of this shift, encapsulating the growing challenges faced by those fighting for equality and freedom in Putin's Russia. Amidst the turmoil of protests and the shadow of repressive legislation, activists like Masha and Lyosha found themselves at the forefront of a battle for the soul of their nation, a fight not just against authoritarianism, but also against the erasure and marginalization of diverse identities. Part 10, From Hope to Exile, The Darkening Horizon of LGBTQ+ Rights in Russia. In a stark demonstration of societal sentiment, a televised debate on proposed anti-homosexuality legislation revealed overwhelming support for the draconian measures, with a significant majority voicing their approval. This event marked a chilling moment for the LGBTQ+ community in Russia, including Lyosha, whose dwindling hope was extinguished by the brutal realities that unfolded in 2013. The internet became a battleground where videos of gay men being humiliated and tortured circulated widely, shockingly without law enforcement intervention. This apathy signaled a disturbing normalization of violence against the LGBTQ+ community, underscoring the imminent passage of the new laws. The harrowing story of Vlad Tornovoy, a young man subjected to fatal torture at the hands of acquaintances for his sexuality, painfully underscored the consequences of escalating homophobia fueled by nationalist fervor. The reaction to Tornovoy's murder by a prominent advocate of the anti-gay legislation, who bizarrely claimed that such laws would prevent future violence by suppressing non-traditional sexuality, epitomized the twisted logic that was beginning to permeate Russian society. The legislative tsunami that followed, including bans on homosexual propaganda, extended to innocuous symbols like rainbows on cheese packaging and prohibiting LGBTQ+ individuals from adopting children, erected insurmountable barriers for the community. Lyosha, a political science teacher and a beacon of support for those targeted by these laws, found himself under unnerving surveillance at his workplace, a prelude to an untenable situation that forced him to leave Russia. Seeking refuge, Lyosha joined a vibrant diaspora of Russian exiles in Brighton Beach, New York City, where he tirelessly worked to assist newcomers in navigating the complexities of asylum and employment in the U.S. This transition from activism within Russia to a life of exile was not just a personal journey for Lyosha, but a testament to the dire state of human rights in Putin's Russia. Meanwhile, the psychological toll of these rapid social changes became evident in Marina Arutyunyan's psychoanalysis practice. The clients who once celebrated the stability Putin's presidency purportedly brought were now grappling with panic attacks and existential dread. The fabric of society, once falsely unified under the guise of stability, was unraveling, revealing deep-seated fears and uncertainties. Arutyunyan, reflecting on these developments, could not help but ponder Freud's theory of the death drive, a concept suggesting an inherent, self-destructive impulse following trauma. as she witnessed the collective anguish of her clients and the broader societal upheaval, Arutyunyan contemplated a haunting question. Could an entire nation be succumbing to a death drive, driven by the trauma of rapid legislative changes and the erosion of civil liberties? This introspection pointed to a profound crisis within Russian society, where stability had given way to fear, and hope was replaced by a grim struggle for survival. Final summary. At the heart of this compelling narrative is a chronicle of Russia's tumultuous voyage through history, marked by a profound struggle with its own identity and the shaping of its political destiny. The Soviet Union's long-standing isolation from global discourse and its deliberate exclusion of social psychology and self-reflection from educational doctrines left its citizens ill-equipped to navigate the psychological and societal complexities that emerged in the wake of communism's collapse. This foundational void in self-understanding and critical societal insight set the stage for a nation grappling with the sudden onslaught of uncertainty and instability. Such vulnerability paved the way for the rise of Vladimir Putin, an autocratic leader who has adeptly capitalized on Russia's longing for stability and order. Through cunning manipulation and oppressive strategies, including the deployment of anti-LGBTQ+ rhetoric and laws as a political tool, Putin has tightened his grip on power, steering Russia on a precipitous path away from the ideals of democracy. Under Putin's rule, Russia has witnessed a disturbing resurgence of authoritarianism, with the government implementing draconian laws targeting the LGBTQ+ community, stifling dissent, and eroding fundamental freedoms. These developments signal a perilous trajectory towards an increasingly totalitarian state, where the echoes of the Soviet era resonate with alarming clarity in the present day. This narrative not only chronicles the intricate dance between power and identity in post-Soviet Russia, but also serves as a cautionary tale about the fragility of democracy and the ever-present shadow of autocracy. Thank you for joining me today on this journey of learning and discovery as we explored the insights of another thought-provoking book in our growing library of knowledge. If you've enjoyed our time together, please take a moment to follow our podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and share 20-minute books with other knowledge seekers. Your support truly means a lot. Don't forget to join me again in the next episode, where we will delve into another enriching book. Until then, happy reading and happy listening.